You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 21st of October 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rusjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. I'm so pleased that you managed to get through COVID in your back. How are you doing today anyway?
Well, I'm back in Pennsylvania, which is a little bit depressing, but believe it or not, everything is vaguely back to normal here, which is definitely a good thing. So I lost a month of my life, but at least now I'm pretty sure I'm immune from this thing and I don't have to worry about it. But my God, I wouldn't wish this on anybody.
Well, that's great. I know you've had a nice holiday last week as well. And we're back into the geopolitics this week. We're talking about the Great Reset. And we have an article from Dr. Joseph Mercola that we're going to be getting into today. We're going to be basically finding out exactly what the Great Reset means. We'll start with an overview of what we will be discussing. The World Economic Forum's 2030 agenda includes the dictum that you will own nothing and be happy. The unstated implication is that the world's resources will be owned and controlled by the technocratic elite, and you'll have to pay for the temporary use of everything. The WEF's 2030 agenda is part of what is now advertised as the Great Reset. Also part of the Great Reset is the transition from shareholder capitalism to stakeholder capitalism, which world leaders claim will provide equity for all. In reality, stakeholder capitalism destroys freedom and shifts power over nations from elected governments to private corporations and other unelected so-called stakeholders such as the WEF. Since the first quarter of 2020, we have already gotten a taste of what the Great Reset will mean for public health. The basic premise is that of a biosecurity state where unelected stakeholders decide what is best for everyone. So there's loads there, Matt, but I know that you've actually looked into the book that this Klaus Schwab wrote as well. So you know in detail what all of this means. Do you want to pick up on any of this introduction or summarize it for us?
Well, we've done at least one show on it. And, you know, the Great Reset is kind of part of our normal vocabulary now. This is supposed to be the apogee of what we used to call the New World Order. And it needed, you know, most revolutions have a war. You know, World War One is the obvious one. World War Two. I mean, these revolutions, the Civil War, these revolutionized societies. The governments were able to, elites were able to use warfare and all the confusion it creates. This time around, there is no world war. I mean, even Vietnam is another example. But COVID is the occasion for this, and it's even worse because it's not. It's not a war. It's not against a person. You know, this virus could be anywhere, and it's changing forms. And the regime uses fear mongering. So, to you know, like Prince Charles and all these elites say, they have a very small window to revolutionize society. Coming down to destroying small business, destroying any independent sources of political formation, no matter what it might be, completely remove cash. Have a complete merger of Wall Street and the state, which we've been talking about for a long time, eliminate debt, but of course taking all the equity, which was, I think, really is the main part of it. If anything comes through with this, it's going to be that. And of course, transhumanism, which in Klaus Schwab's book, he talks about quite a bit. He's an economist and an engineer, which I think is a pretty dangerous combination, where certain aspects of, you know, technology will become a physical part of the human person, including the idea of trying to read thoughts, and constantly surveilling people as to what their thoughts might be. This is something the Soviet Union tried to do very crudely and failed. And using the mental health industry, any dissidence is now, you know, a version of schizophrenia. The Soviets did that too. And so, and I think this guy is a medical doctor, and I like the art. He's a little naive politically, but because he knows several angles here as an expert, a legitimate one, he knows exactly what's happening here. This is supposed to be the great revolution beyond the French, beyond the British, beyond the Soviet, where BlackRock and a handful of monopolies, which needed COVID to come into existence, now control everything, including the thought process of people.
Well, that's a very handy excuse, isn't it? A global pandemic, and it requires a global agenda afterwards to put everything right. It means that they can get their tentacles into everything, basically. Well, the World Economic Forum's 2030 agenda includes the strangely ominous dictum that you will own nothing and be happy. The unstated implication is that the world's resources will be owned and controlled by the technocratic elite, and you will have to pay for the temporary use of absolutely everything. Nothing will actually belong to you. All items and resources are to be used by the collective, while actual ownership is restricted to an upper stratum of a social class. Just how will this imposed serfdom make you happy? Again, the unstated implication is that lack of ownership is a convenience. They're just making your life easier. Rent a pot and then return it. You don't need storage space. Imagine the freedom. They even promise the convenience of automatic drone delivery straight to your door. Artificial intelligence, which is siphoning your data and every aspect of your existence through nearly every piece of technology and appliance you own, will run your life, predicting your every mood and desire, catering to your every whim. Ah, the luxury of not having to make any decisions. I mean, this really, to me, it seems like what communism was talking about, isn't it? The loss of private property, and all they seem to have done is modernized it, and they're trying to get people to buy into this. Do you think people are going to buy into it, Matt, and think that they're really going to own nothing and be happy?
For a long time, I argued that, you know, freedom, the freedom to make rational decisions that affect your life and the lives of people close to you is a huge burden. You know, existentialism is based on that. That the mass society, like Ortega spoke of, Michael Oakeshott spoke of, is always running away from freedom. That freedom is a huge, you know, when something is your fault, if it goes wrong, that's a huge burden to carry, especially if you have any kind of power. All people are always blaming someone else. Taking away that kind of a freedom of choice and reason, allowing others to structure your life, that is going to be attractive to people, especially after a huge crisis. And there's not going to be the economic foundation for any kind of freedom. There has to be, as Aristotle would say, there has to be this basic, or even Jefferson, basic income and autonomy, like your own income, not given to you by somebody, that allows you to be free and not have to depend on anyone. This is what's being removed here. And if it happens gradually, if it's the media, of course, is going to control the narrative and say what they want, it's going to be attractive to a lot of people. It's real easy to parody people like us. It's real easy to consider us dangerous. It doesn't take much. I mean, the censorship is shutting down every possible serious argument against this, so people really just don't know. And it's real easy to caricature us, especially since we really have no leadership, we have no institutions, and anybody who does that is you know, is putting his life on the line. So all of this, it sounds good. I mean, people already are looking at, you know, the phones as a part of their person. They can't be without it. You know, this is step one in this, you know, merger of machine life and you know, you're using computer technology as a metaphor for how the brain works. There's no freedom in the scientific mentality anyway. So, and in a huge crisis, a huge economic meltdown, I think at least mass society will love this, and especially when they get out of debt.
Yeah, freedom from responsibility will seem very enticing to the majority, I would have thought, sadly. Well, let's have a look at the main person that seems to be promoting this, Justin Trudeau. This is the mindset they're trying to program into you. As just one example, in a mid-November 2020 video announcement, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said, "This pandemic has provided an opportunity for a reset. This is our chance to accelerate our pre-pandemic efforts to reimagine economic systems that actually address global challenges like extreme poverty, inequality, and climate change." So he's not interested in doing anything for Canada here. He's such a good guy. He wants to eliminate world poverty and climate change. Some, however, are starting to realise that these narratives of building back better and resetting the economy to ensure equity are proverbial mousetraps. Once you bite the cheese, you'll be stuck, robbed of your freedom forevermore. The technocratic elite, of course, do not want you to understand the real-world ramifications of what they have planned, which is why they try to sell this diabolical idea as something that will benefit society and finally make life fair for everyone. It's an attractive narrative, but a dangerous fantasy to buy into. As noted on November the 16th, 2020 by National File, Trudeau suggested the COVID-19 virus provided an opportunity for a reset to reimagine economic systems. This was taken as an endorsement of a World Economic Forum plan to concentrate most private property in the hands of big tech mega corporations. The Great Reset Plan involves a collaboration between national governments and international bodies to reset capitalism with an integrated transnational technocratic welfare surveillance state by the year 2030. WEF member corporations and government partners would accomplish the reset by using economic policy to virtually abolish individual property and concentrate nearly all wealth in the hands of international mega corporations. The idea would be to leverage the welfare state and gig economy to replace the economic status quo of individual ownership with one where the majority of individual needs are rented instead. The WEF's 2030 agenda is part and parcel of what is now advertised as the Great Reset, a plan that originated in something called the Global Redesign Initiative, drafted by the WEF in the wake of the 2008 economic crisis. The Transnational Institute's website describes this initiative as multi-stakeholderism, as a new form of global governance. Seems to me as if they're trying to reimagine what the nation is. I mean, the nation is supposed to work for the good of the nation. And instead of doing that, they're trying to get all the individuals together working for the good of these corporations. And the way they're going to achieve that is by saying, well, it gives everybody a say, but it doesn't actually give any ethnic group an actual say in this. It gives a say to the NGOs and it limits government to just being on the same standing as corporations. And of course, the corporations will be right at the center here. And I think we can see this just from the way that Trudeau is talking about this, and he's talking about all these global issues, and he's not talking about Canada at all. The rest of the world is not Trudeau's problem. His problem should be dealing with Canada, don't you think, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, at an absolute minimum. And, you know, ethnicity, you know, going through Schwab's work and people supporting this, ethnicity, unless it's useful to them, is not mentioned. If everything is digitized, including the so-called gig economy, which means you don't have a regular job, that's for a higher strata of people. Physical things like your, you know, families and any kind of blood relation, ethnic or otherwise, is nowhere to be found. And given what they're going to try to do in externalizing the thought process, any mention in your own mind of and this is getting worse, and the technology is certainly there, any mention of any kind of nationalism is going to get you into a lot of trouble. The Soviets had this idea of, you know, the term is something along the lines of pre-schizophrenic state. You're not quite mentally ill yet, but something like any kind of dissident, no matter how private it might be, any kind of dissident thought is going to get you in an institution. And I'm guaranteeing you, one of the predictions I've made on this show is that the next DSM, or the mental illness, you know, encyclopedia, is going to have people like us having our own illness. whatever they call, you know, social defiant disorder. I gave a whole bunch of names for what it might be. But if this even goes halfway to what it wants, you're not even going to have the ability to think this through. You're not going to have the ability cognitively if everything is under tight control. If you know, Amazon gets rid of anything that's even remotely on our side, and certainly Facebook and all the rest. I mean, this is how debate is being done. And even worse than this, as far as the state is concerned, now how many times have we said this, that if the state is going to borrow directly from the Fed, and of course not really having the money to pay it back, that automatically means then huge chunks of the state will then immediately be privatized and brought under the Fed's control. That's what that implies. That's what this whole thing implies. You know, the Great Reset is to eliminate debt, but of course the regime, the monopoly, takes over equity. And that's all people are going to care about. And the rest of it, you know, again, what, you know, how tightly connected they are with their cell phones and everything, that everything is now being digitized. And the fear that people have, things like ethnicity, things like tradition, that doesn't have a place here. This is and this kind of now how far this is going to go, I don't know. A lot of this is utopian thinking from their point of view, and how far the technology is going to go or what, you know, the ACLU is gone. Apparently they have no role and they've done their job. They're finished. But even if this is halfway done, things like ethnicity simply aren't even going to be mentioned. And since we're used to now executives, you know, presidents and prime ministers and the rest to simply, or governors, to dictate policy directly without any judicial or legislative input, and we're now used to that, that's all they have to do. I have a paper coming out on executive orders, what these really are supposed to be, and it's going to be ruled by executive orders. And whatever the courts are going to do, I don't know. But this is what the state's going to end up being. It's just going to be an instrument of power rather than a power in its own right. And it's going to be even more privatized because everything now is going to be debt for equity swap, which means this monopoly is going to be able to run everything.
Well, they're doing it under this disguise of stakeholder capitalism. But just what is stakeholder capitalism? If it's fairer and it makes everyone more prosperous than the shareholder capitalist system we currently have, shouldn't we all be supporting it? The problem is that the way it is described is not how it actually works in the real world. It sounds great in theory, but the end result is not going to benefit the average person. As reported by Ivan Weck on Open Democracy in an article titled "Conspiracy Theories Aside, There Is Something Fishy About the Great Reset," quote, "The set of conspiracy theories around the Great Reset are nebulous and hard to pin down, but piecing them together gives us something like this. The Great Reset is the global elite's plan to instate a communist world order by abolishing private property while using COVID-19 to solve overpopulation and enslaving what remains of humanity with vaccines," close quote. The magic words are stakeholder capitalism, a concept that WEF Chairman Klaus Schwab has been hammering for decades and which occupies pride of place in the WEF's Great Reset plan from June 2020. The idea is that global capitalism should be transformed so that corporations no longer focus solely on serving shareholders, but become custodians of society by creating value for customers, suppliers, employees, communities, and other stakeholders. The way the WEF sees stakeholder capitalism being carried out is through a range of multi-stakeholder partnerships, bringing together the private sector, governments, and civil society across all areas of global governance. I mean, it is basically just a way to sneak globalism in. But what about powers like Russia and China? Are they going to go along with this, do you think, Matt, or not?
Well, I think one of the themes of my career, the last, you know, 15 years, one of the themes of this show on Thursdays and everything I do is that alliance, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, where you have extremely powerful countries far more powerful than the U.S., especially in combination, are the only break on this. That's why the hysterical reaction. I mean, Oleg Deripaska, American offices were raided the other day. I think it was yesterday or the day before, because he had something to do with trying to steal the election for Trump. I mean, this is still going on. And I didn't think Deripaska was someone who they would dislike. But that's how this is continuing. The hysteria about Russia and, of course, China, and the myths and the stories and the media nonsense and Johnson's Law and all this, they clearly see these two powers as the – I mean, this is what liberalism is supposed to be. This is liberalism in a nutshell, this type of capital control. There's nothing anomalous here. So the anti-liberal movement, I mean, Iran's a big part of this. A lot of countries in what we used to call the Third World, but they're the only break on this. That's why these guys, and you know, they'll kill people. They'll drive the military to nothing. They'll destroy whatever they have to stop this. We all know China just tested its supersonic missile, which now has rendered the American missile defense completely obsolete. And of course, the aircraft carriers now obsolete. The Chinese missile system. That they're not going anywhere. So the one hope we have is this international struggle. And I want to, you know, hope they recognize what we're doing here, because no domestic movement like this could really go anywhere without foreign support. But the only reason a war would ever take place with these countries is to stop them being a break on this. Because now so much trade is in their hands, so much gold, so much natural resource, so many dollars, the West is hogtied right now. And Putin's aware of this. Chinese are aware of this. So what they're going to do, how they're going to lash out, is one of the most frightening aspects of this situation. But as their militaries continue to grow and the American military continues to fail, it looks like, you know, this might be short lived. That's the only chance we have.
So hopefully China and Russia will at least slow it down, if not stop it. Well, the Global Redesign Initiative, which served as the basis for the Great Reset, has been described as the most comprehensive proposal for redesigning global governance since the formulation of the United Nations during World War II. So this is no minor tweak. It's a complete overhaul of how we do business and govern nations, not only in the US, but globally. In this multi-stakeholder model, government is just one stakeholder among many. Other stakeholders that would have to be taken into account include non-governmental organizations, such as the WEF itself, and multinational corporations. In other words, these other stakeholders will have a say in how nations are governed. Multinational corporations, I guess that would include Amazon and Facebook. Notice that world leaders will stress that the stakeholders include the environment and workers. The truth, however, is that the needs and desires of workers and the natural world are hardly at the center of this model. As explained by Weck, instead of corporations serving many stakeholders in the multi-stakeholder model of global governance, corporations are promoted to being official stakeholders in global decision-making, while governments are relegated to being one of many stakeholders. In practice, corporations become the main stakeholders, while governments take a backseat role, and civil society is mainly just window dressing. So I guess what it means is a seat at the table at the UN for Facebook and Twitter and Amazon, and all these corporations basically having the final say rather than governments and just this facade that we still have a democracy. What do you make of what it's saying here, Matt?
Well, I think he's a little naive, acting like this hasn't been the case before. If those companies were to have a seat at the UN, it certainly wouldn't be under those names. They, you know, an NGO, the powerful Amnesty International, the rest of these, this is the political voice of corporate America. You go to their funding page and they have all the lists of the same big corporations that control them and that finance them. So this is how corporations function internationally. It has nothing to do with these groups are not autonomous. And so, you know, a group like Amnesty International, all these names that we have here, Global Redesign Initiative, which came out after the 2008 crisis, which these very same people created and profited from, that didn't go very far. It's been around long before COVID. Privatizing the state and making private entities public powers. Only difference being, of course, one is for profit, the other one isn't. But as we said before, as U.S. government is deeper and deeper in debt and European governments are worse, they have to go directly to the big banks to do this through the Fed. And that direct monetization of debt means that the state now is going to become more privatized than ever. And we don't know where private ends and public begins, because now there is no distinction between those two. But this guy's acting like, you know, civil society is anything but major corporations. A stakeholder is elite powers using terms like civil society to hide behind that that make decisions. These are nothing more than corporate mouthpieces. You know, the list of people, you know, labor and customers, that's everybody. Well, who could represent everybody? So it'll end up being an oligarchy of these NGOs that that completely merge public and private power. And we don't even have any words like communist. It's ridiculous. We don't even have a word for this yet. How many times have I said that? We don't have a vocabulary for this yet except regime and the monopoly of BlackRock. But that's completely transcended the public and private distinction. The state is an instrument of power, not a power in its own right.
It's Babylon all over again. Maybe that would be the right word to describe it. Weck points out that this multi-stakeholder ecosystem has already been implemented and is expanding with each passing day. It's not something that they are proposing to implement in the future. Instead, they are basically just telling us now what they've been doing for years already. Multi-stakeholder groups have spread across all sectors of the global governance system, Weck says, noting there are already more than 45 global multi-stakeholder groups that set standards and establish guidelines and rules in a range of areas. These groups, which have no democratic accountability, consist of large multinational corporations which recruit insiders within government, civil society and educational institutions. Together they claim to solve all sorts of problems that plague society. And as he was saying there, this is already going on. He's got a description of it here that's to do with COVID-19. And since the first quarter of 2020, we've already gotten a taste of what the Great Reset will mean for public health. It's basically founded on the premise that we live in a biosecurity state where these unelected stakeholders decide what is best for us, regardless of how we feel about it. One example of a multi-stakeholder ecosystem that is already up and running is the COVAX initiative, the aim of which is to accelerate the rollout of COVID-19 vaccines. This initiative was created by two multi-stakeholder groups, GAVI or Gavi and the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, CEPI, in partnership with the World Health Organization, of course, and funded by governments. Gavi and CEPI are both tied to the WEF, the WEF, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and a long list of drug companies. As noted by Weck, while governments are funding the COVAX initiative, corporate-centered coalitions Gavi and CEPI are overseeing and reaping the profits from the work. We've already been given a glimpse at the core problem with this system, which is that it is entirely profit-driven. In 2020, South Africa and India sought to lift intellectual property rules on COVID-19 vaccine technologies to boost manufacturing in developing countries. Gavi, Gates himself, and the drug industry strongly opposed, as you would expect they would. Why? Because public health is not their prime incentive or motivation. Profit is. Profit is their main interest, and as a primary stakeholder, their interests must be weighed against other stakeholder interests, such as people's want and desire to not get sick and die. Well, they're at the center of the power structure, so guess whose interest wins? And who will always win. And I guess with these vaccines as well, and with these boosters every 3 months, every 6 months, I mean, they're basically just setting up a continual income stream, continual profit for them that everybody is going to continue to need. And also people are going to need medical interventions to solve the problems that the vaccine technology has introduced into their bodies as well. I mean, it's hard to get away from this. What do you make of what's being said here, Matt?
Well, if you go to the Gavi and CEPI websites, they're pretty much identical. You look at the people involved, and they're usually health ministers from various countries. And every once in a while, you'll find, you know, a private sector, you know, someone from the Gates Foundation or Berkshire Hathaway or something like that. But the only thing is here, I would say that profit, except for the lower level companies, I don't think it matters too much. Most of the elites who run this, who created this, are already multi-billionaires. They have many different sources of income. I'm willing to say that power and ideology are far more important than profit. We've already seen elites willing to sacrifice profit for the sake of ideology. All kinds of TV shows, the NFL, powerful corporations who will lose money rather than give up their ideological agenda, which alienates people. They're willing to do this. So it's taking over and eliminating dissent, I think, is far more. And they're willing to spend a fortune for that. But the Gavi and Seppi have everything to do with subsidizing these vaccines, which we all know have been an absolute disaster. That if this were any other vaccine, this would have been pulled from the market, you know, months ago. And the people who are controlling these firms, again, they're already multimillionaires, multibillionaires. Giving this stuff away wouldn't affect them at all. So I'm willing to say that power and control and whatever really the long-term effects of this vaccine is, and I don't even want to think about it, and how, you know, the destruction of white blood cells, you know, being able to have an immune system requires these constant boosters, which we weren't told in the very beginning. It's supposed to be a one-time thing like a polio vaccine. And now all of a sudden we're seeing this, the overwhelming. You have hospitals shutting down because nurses and doctors are refusing to get this. Airline pilots, we've all read about that. Industries are collapsing for this. And of course they pull back the mandate. These guys know what's going on. They know how destructive this vaccine is. And it really is disrupting their system.
Well, this is why you would think that, you know, maybe Biden would pull back on it once he saw that all these strikes are happening or whatever. But if he's being told to do this by these stakeholders, and America is a part of this, that's the reason why he's doing it. That's the reason why we have these global policies. I mean, it looked last year as if it was coming from the World Health Organization, but we've always known there were other shadowy groups involved. Well, we're in for a medical reset as well. Hospitals around the US are all being instructed to use the deadliest COVID treatments imaginable, and doctors who defy the guidance and actually do what is best for their patients are having their medical licenses threatened. Merely speaking out about effective COVID treatments will put a bullseye on a physician's back. In countries everywhere, people are told COVID shots are the only way forward, and vaccine passports, once derided as a paranoid conspiracy theory, are being implemented. Who made these decisions? No one is admitting the real source of these lockstep decisions, but we can be sure they are coming from a central hub run by people that no one ever voted into power. Around the world, a twisted mind game is being played out, where world leaders are now telling us that vaccine passports are our ticket to freedom, completely ignoring the fact that our freedom is not and cannot be predicated on our medical choices. That the disease countermeasures we currently see for COVID-19 won't end with COVID-19 is clear. Already, President Biden has signed an executive order adding measles to the list of diseases for which a person can be quarantined and or forced to self-isolate to protect public health. Again, what is being built all around us is a biosecurity state that will control every aspect of our lives under the auspice of protecting public health. All whilst doing no such thing. It is undeniable that the COVID countermeasures have wrought far more destruction than the virus actually did, and these countermeasures continue to destroy lives and kill people unnecessarily, all under the banner of keeping us safe from disease. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this?
This all comes from the regime. This shadowy monopoly power that very few people know anything about. No executive, whether it be president or anyone else in America, has the power to push this through executive order. There's no existing law that he's basing this on. There's no power of the presidency in the Constitution that he's basing this on. Those are the only two things that an executive order could ever be legitimate. So I'm not sure what the courts are going to now. The mandate turned out to be a myth, but he's still very close to doing this anyway. The executive order cannot be used for this. And people are now used to chief executives simply doing what they please without any legislative or judicial input. And because they're used to it, of course, the media has said nothing, it's now going to become the norm. But there's no legal backing for any of these emergency measures or any of these executive orders. That's not what an executive order is.
And we certainly can't rely on the courts to stop them either, considering the way that the courts were stacked. We saw how they respond with the vote rigging earlier this year. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.